Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, here we go. It is great to have you in on a Thursday. Live in Los Angeles, it is the Herd. Wherever you may be, however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, 1 hour from now, Greg Cosell. If you like fantasy football, you like betting on football, you just want to get smarter at football, best 15-minute listen we have for you every week. Greg Cosell explaining what happened last week and trying to make sense of what happens this week. Joy Taylor is joining me. Joy went to the Lakers game last night. It was probably the most entertaining, the best, most well-played Laker game last night. They were great hitting threes all night long.
It was an exciting game. It's always fun to be at a game that goes to overtime.
Yeah.
And like tension, and you know, I'm excited for the Lakers fans. It was nice. There was a lot to learn from last night, so it was a good night and lots of fun. Happy Veterans Day to all the veterans.
Happy Veterans Day throughout America. Thanks so much again for joining us. You know, Westbrook last night played pretty well, right? And I know what you're saying. Colin, I told you so. No. We told you so. We told you on a Wednesday night in November, minutes, passion, production, hustle, Westbrook's amazing. Westbrook is a lot of things. Just not somebody I want with the ball, fourth quarter, big playoff game, 2:30 left, need a bucket, need good judgment, need a three. He's no good. Very few players are all things. Steph Curry, LeBron in his prime, they're all things. You know, it's funny, in football, we understand there are sides, offense and defense, special teams. There are units, offensive line, linebacking unit. There are positions, wide receiver, running back. In basketball, it's like, we're just all out here hooping. No, it's kind of like football. Andre Drummond, there'll be no three-pointers from you. Russell Westbrook, give me passion and give me minutes. I don't want you handling the ball when LeBron's on the floor. Basketball's got a lot of that, too. All of our lives are like that. You got your fun friend, your party friend, your Vegas friend, your friend you trust if you have to go to the doctor, and you're a little woozy, you want to drive home. There's your wisdom friend. There's I just broke up. I need some empathy. I need some love friend. We all got different spaces and people. And with Westbrook, I'm not anti-Westbrook. I'm just anti-Westbrook in crisis, fourth quarter, playoffs in June. I need a three or a great judgment. I'm not anti-Westbrook. I actually was pro-Westbrook to the Lakers. In fact, last night's a classic example. I went over and looked at the minutes this morning. Well, you had Carmelo Anthony. You had him playing 38 minutes. You had Anthony Davis playing 45 minutes. You had Malik Monk playing 35. Avery Bradley playing 40 minutes. You don't win that game without Westbrook last night. Last night was the great example why you brought Westbrook in. 80's brittle. The bench is old. LeBron gets hurt more. We need Westbrook, and you do not win that game without Westbrook. Here's the thing. I would love to have a convertible sports car. Not in winter. Some things I love, some things I like. I don't need them all the time. I can't use them all the time. And I think even the people who love Westbrook, who play with Westbrook, who recruited Westbrook, because he played well last night. Anthony Davis, a great example. Listen to this. He loves him. He plays with him. He talks to him. He practices with him. But he knows what he is.
One thing about Russ, he has no conscience. You know, he can miss 20 in a row. He's going to shoot the next one. Two big-time shots. He's fearless, relentless. And then also, you know, his ability to see the floor. You know, we had a conversation about what he wants to see from us so we can help him cut down the turnovers. I say that, and he had eight. But, at least it wasn't a triple-double or a quadruple-double.
Yeah, I'm like everybody knows it. He's relentless and has a lot of turnovers. And you kind of close your eyes, cross your fingers in big spots. You know, when you stop trying to convince people to think like you in politics and sports, you're a lot less miserable. I used to, with Westbrook, try to convince you what he was. And then the data and the games proved what he was. I'm no longer in the trying to convince you Westbrook is what he was. This is it. You see it. And Wednesday night in November at home, LeBron hurt. I need 38 minutes from Carmelo off the bench. You do not win that game without Westbrook. I think seeding in the West this year will be more important. I don't think LeBron's in his prime where he can go on the road and just dominate a series, turn it on, and play 44 nights a minute. I think home court advantage is going to matter against a team like Golden State if you're the Lakers. I think home court advantage is going to matter against the Denver Nuggets going up into that altitude. I think you want to play more games at home than on the road. I think home court advantage is going to matter against the Dallas Mavericks. So, yes, it's not a told you so. It's a we told you so. This is what Westbrook was. This is why he's in Los Angeles. Last night is exactly why. But when LeBron comes back, he won't be taking those shots. He won't be getting those minutes. He won't have the ball in crisis or shooting big threes. All right, so I want to shift gears to this. So Odell Beckham, apparently like eight teams have made offers. They've gone out and said, we like him. And it's interesting because there was no NFL on Tuesday. There was no NFL last night. The game tonight could be a blowout. So this midweek, there's not a lot to talk about. So OBJ is actually, for us, kind of a fascinating topic. But you do all understand all eight teams vying for him. And I think Green Bay is the most interesting. I think New England, New Orleans make the most sense. Y'all understand he's no longer one-handed catch Odell. Happiness is about expectations. Just lower your expectations. He is brittle. He kind of freelances on routes. He got a case of the drops in Cleveland. And as I was told by an executive and a scout, both who faced him earlier this year, you can put single coverage on him. You can put single coverage on him. Saints, New England, he absolutely fills a void. But he is not a number one receiver in the NFL. He is, unless you may talk New England, he's not a number one receiver on all the good teams in the NFL. I don't think he's a two receiver on most of the good teams in the NFL. So just lower expectations, understand what you're getting. He is a five target, three catch. Can you get a couple of big plays out of him if you're the Patriots and you do almost everything else well? That'd be great. And they have no deep threat. New Orleans, can it be an over-the-top, a couple reverses, get him nine looks, used as a decoy for a team that's got a really mediocre wide receiving core? That works. Now, I think Green Bay is fascinating, mostly because they've gotten really noisy this year. They've got a dominant one. I think Matt LaFleur is clever. And Aaron Rodgers mostly makes all receivers kind of work if he trusts them. Like Randall Cobb feels shot. But he had a great game already. He'll end up with about 45 catches this year. That's fine for a guy that's kind of a four to a five receiver on most teams. But this is about expectations. People are getting all worked up about this. Here's what Fox Bet Sportsbook has as the current favorites. Green Bay, number one. Chiefs, Saints, two. Seahawks, Patriots, Ravens. Any other, number seven. Now, it is interesting. I will say this. In free agency, it's a lot like recruiting in college. There is some gamesmanship. And I was just talking to Reggie Bush about this yesterday. I said, why did you choose USC? He said, I didn't have USC on my list initially. He played high school football in San Diego. He goes, I didn't have him in my top five. And USC, Pete Carroll, brought him up with a receiver named Rene Caldwell. Only two of them came up for the recruiting weekend. USC made it a big recruiting weekend. He goes, I left that place, and I was like, wow, that's where I'm going. They made it a special Reggie Bush recruiting weekend. So New England right now is doing a little gamesmanship. You know how with the Patriots, nothing ever gets out. Players don't talk. Coaches don't talk. Belichick doesn't talk. What's interesting about New England now, you're seeing a lot of people talking about Odell Beckham, and it's getting onto social media. Is that New England? Stuff gets out only when they want it out. New England letting OBJ know, man, everybody's talking about you at practice. We can't wait to have Odell Beckham. I think New England really wants him, and is putting on a little gamesmanship. Albert Breer suggested that this morning on the interweb. We're going to have him on in 15 minutes. I think it's a little gamesmanship. I think New England wants him. I really do think he fills a need. He checks a box, which they don't have anybody over the top. He'd be what Nelson Aguilar cannot be.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So Patrick Mahomes said yesterday, listen, I'm going to continue to take shots downfield. And it's interesting about this because as the media fawns over flashy offenses, coaches adjust to flashy offenses. Boring has worked for a long time in this league. It's just not that interesting to talk about or write about. The number one seed in the AFC today is not Kansas City. It's boring Tennessee. New England dominated the sport for 20 years on efficiency and intelligence. The last 4 years with Drew Brees, the Saints could not throw the ball down the field. They went 49-15 and won 4 straight division titles. Yet the greatest show on turf lasted 3 years. They won a Super Bowl, they lost a Super Bowl, they made another playoff, and it disappeared. Remember those Viking teams? Randy Moss, Jake Reed, Chris Carter, Dante Culpepper, 15-1, 10-6, 11-5, and then they dried up. There are things that last in this league, and as the media fawns, the teams adjust. Steelers, in the 70s, defense, 8 straight playoffs, 4 Super Bowls. Ray Lewis's Ravens, 6 of 7 years, the playoffs. But Sean McVay, about 5-6 years ago, came into this league. And everybody was like, woo, the media was fawning. And then Belichick gave the league a blueprint. And the following year, they didn't make the playoffs. And Kansas City, everybody, woo. And now everybody's playing 2 high safeties against them. No freebies over the top. And guess what? They don't look very good. The NFL over the last 20 years has been dominated by boring. Eli, Peyton, and Brady have 11 of the 20 Super Bowls. Peyton 2, Eli 2, Brady 7. Not running around. They're not flashy. They're all good at the line of scrimmage. Good enough arms. Cerebral guys. Great in the 2-minute drill. Usually available in big spots. Flashy's fun, it gets fawned over, but the NFL, flashy does not last very long, and the league adjusts to it. The key is, do you have a counterpunch? It looks like Stafford is the counterpunch to people solving McVay, a quarterback that can go downfield more. Remember, Dan Marino was flashy, no Super Bowls. Aaron Rodgers, last 10 years, pre-Mahomes, flashy, 1 Super Bowl. Eli 2, Peyton 2, Brady 7. I think Kansas City will figure it out, and we can talk about throwing the ball down the field, but right now, they have no running game. Like, no running game. I said this about Mahomes. He can win games throwing 48 times a game. He is best preserved throwing it 32 times a game.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
I'm George Reister, host of the Reister or Wrong podcast. This is the intersection where sports, business, society, and pop culture meet the truth. Absolute fire on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Facts only. Make sure you check your feelings at the door because no BS is allowed. We keep it 100. This is where real conversations happen. Listen to the Right or Wrong podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Michael Irvin, the playmaker for the Dallas Cowboys, was on local Bay Area, that being the San Francisco Bay Area radio, and he was talking about something that now appears to be inevitable. Justin Fields is playing. Mac Jones is playing well. Trevor Lawrence is playing. Everybody's playing. Zach Wilson was playing hurt. He will play again. Everybody's playing except Trey Lance. And here's Michael Irvin's take.
I don't care how the rest of it goes or how the rest of it, how you want to play the rest of it out. The rest of it, whatever we say and however it will fall off, must involve Trey Lance getting reps. You can say that no matter what. Right now, I don't care what the game, how it's going, where it is, what stage where it is, we're going to get him some reps. Now, that's a statement I think they should be making, and that's the direction I think they should be going in, bar none.
Listen, once San Francisco lost at home, routed at home, divisional rival to Colt McCoy, I'd say get Trey Lance some snaps. Now, they are on Monday Night Football, and you want to give your best foot forward if you're Kyle Shanahan, who's getting whacked. The last thing you want to do, throw a rookie out there and just get humiliated by Matt Stafford and the Rams off, by the way, a humiliating loss. So they're going to start Garoppolo, and they're an underdog, and they're going to lose. And so what's going to happen when the Rams beat them? Well, the division is going to have 9-1 Arizona because they'll beat Carolina. That's pretty assured. The Rams will be 8-2, and when the Seahawks lose to the Packers, may, not necessarily, when the Niners lose to the Rams, they're both 3-6, and it's over. And I think it's time to then punt on Jimmy Garoppolo. I thought Jimmy Garoppolo was the play if you were winning. But if you lose on Monday night, you're 3-6, and you're 0-4 in division. It's time to get the kid 500 reps before next season. The good news is it buys Kyle Shanahan some time. Last thing you want to do is bring in another offensive guy, another coordinator. Kyle Shanahan's the play caller. It gives him a year or two with Trey Lance. But they're already, they found a star. They found a gem in the sixth round with Elijah Mitchell at running back. Okay, a couple years ago, they found Deebo Samuel at wide receiver. So got your star back, got your star receiver. Let's figure out and see if we have a star quarterback. We always knew Trey Lance was going to be a little behind everybody. I hadn't. And we also knew that Garoppolo was better than like an Andy Dalton, right? The Jets didn't really have a choice. Either did the Jaguars. You know, we kind of thought Garoppolo, my takeaway was play him for 8 if he's healthy and you trust Trey Lance, then trade him, get a 4th-round pick for Garoppolo and play Trey Lance. I don't know if Trey Lance is ready or not, but the truth is, if you lose on Monday Night Football, it's time to get the kid reps. I don't think it's overly complicated. Jimmy mattered when he was winning. Jimmy was the play when they were winning. Another factor, Kyle Shanahan didn't trust Garoppolo. Watch the games. It looked like Arizona had more trust in Colt McCoy from play calling than the Niners did in Jimmy Garoppolo. It's time to move on.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
So OBJ, according to Diana Rossini, a reporter, has told people he's going to wait till after the weekend of football to make his announcement. And there's 7 or 8 teams that are vying for him. Again, I'd like to say I think he fits best the Saints and Patriots. But the Packers is way more fun because I think the Packers are a Super Bowl team and OBJ in big games would be a lot of fun, right? Whereas I think he helps New England. He helps the Saints. I think they could be playoff teams, wild card teams. I don't know if he takes them to another level. I don't think he's there as a player. But I do think some of this is orchestrated because I've made the argument he's a bigger brand than he is a playmaker right now. And that, let's be honest, over the next several days, he's going to get a lot of attention. And as his brand has really, I mean, it has shrunk. It's evaporated over the last 2 to 3 years. We're giving him a lot of press, and we're talking about him. He's probably selling some shoes. That's not a terrible thing. I mean, this is not illegal. I do think marketing and rumors are good for all sorts of people. They're good for politicians. They're good for media people. They're good for athletes. Getting your name out there, a little bit of mystery. You ever go to a concert? You ever notice the number one act's always a little late to get on stage? Kind of ramps up. Oh, man. Now, Guns N' Roses would be late, you know, by 4 hours. But you know, the generally, they don't hit the mark exactly when they're supposed to be on, right? A little anticipation. I think you build up for OBJ. I was on a Boston radio station yesterday, WEEI, for a diabetes charity. Support that, by the way, Christian Fourier, the former football player. And that's all they were talking about. You know, Boston's got a lot of things going on. All they were talking about was the guy that's not on their team. Their big hole. I asked him, I said, what's your big topic tomorrow? They're like, OBJ. It was like, he's not even on the team. I know. I said, well, everybody's talking about OBJ. So I think everybody's talking. They're percolating. It's interesting. We discuss it. And there you go. So some of this is brand. One of my criticisms when he went to Cleveland, I said he's a little more brand than he is football player. In fact, I said of the 10 things I talk about him, the one-handed catch was way up there, but he'd become models and stuff and, you know, some theatrics on the sideline and social media. He'd become a bigger brand than he was a player. I don't have a problem with brand. I mean, KD's got a brand. He's a great player. LeBron's got a brand. Great player. You know, Aaron's got a brand. He's a great player. I don't have a problem with that. Push. Baker, sometimes the brand's bigger than the player. I know. I'm picking on Baker. But in OBJ's case, I mean, I'm getting nothing from productivity, and I think he's trying to kind of get people to talk about him for 3 days. That's fine. It's fun. I'll be looking. I'll be on my Angry Bird Twitter all weekend long, trying to figure out, even on Sunday, where he's going to go. I think the Packers would be a lot of fun.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
With that, 42 years at NFL Films, the most objective voice when talking about real football, what we see, what we get. Greg Cosell now joining me live on Thursday. All right, so, you know, I often say this about quarterbacks, especially young ones. The coaches will tell me what they think of them by what they let them do. And boy, yep. I thought that 18 months in that building in Green Bay, and I thought that was a tepid game plan. What did you make of the first start? You see anything you like with Jordan Love?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I watched the tape and I was expecting, based on everything I had heard, Colin, to see a horrible performance. I did not. First of all, their O-line was so bad. He was under pressure in the first half, way too much pressure. Now, inexperienced quarterbacks, as you know, almost always show a tendency to play fast anyway. But up the middle pressure makes that worse. And that is what Love faced on far too many snaps. And say what you want about Steve Spagnuolo and that defense, the production hasn't been there this year, but that is a difficult defense to play against tactically because of the pressure. They had 5 snaps of 0 blitz. The Packers did a really poor job on all of them. Now, you can't pick up everybody in 0 blitz normally, but they were letting defenders clean through the A gap and the B gap. And I thought as the game progressed and you got into the second half, I thought Love settled down a bit. If there wasn't all this hype about Jordan Love, if he was, let's say, a rookie in his first start week one, you would say, that's not a bad performance. There's something to build on. So I'm not, based on tape study, Colin, I don't believe it was a terrible performance at all.
Yeah. My knock was I didn't see a lot of juice. Like when I watch Justin Fields, I see juice. I see big, athletic, run, arm. I see a lot of stuff. My thing with Jordan was I didn't see it wasn't a disaster. It just felt like
I didn't see
a moment where I was like, wow. I didn't get a wow moment. Is that fair?
Yeah, but I mean, I think wow can be defined in many different ways. That was a tough defense for him to play against. Yeah, I mean, I'm not exactly sure what you mean by wow, you know, that special play. No, you probably did not see that. But you also have to take into account the fact that as that game progressed in the second half, he kind of settled in a little bit. He had a stretch in the second half where he started to look pretty comfortable. Now, in all likelihood, he's not going to play another snap this season, so we'll have no idea.
Right. All right, there you go. There's a throw right there. So a game that very few people watched, I did. I actually thought Matt Ryan looked pretty good. You know, their margins are thin, so Atlanta's not going to blow anybody away. If they win, it's pretty tight. But I will say, Arthur Smith, we know that Matt Ryan, when he gets the right coordinator, can be a very effective coordinator. The right voice in his ear can be very effective. What do you see with Kyle Pitts, Arthur Smith, Matt Ryan? What does the tape say?
The tape tells you that Arthur Smith is doing a really good job of designing and creating one-on-one matchups for Kyle Pitts and Cordarrelle Patterson. And those are his two playmakers. And he's doing a really good job. We saw that this past week against a good Saints defense. But that's essentially been happening all season long. They're a very under-the-radar team. Obviously, they've got some significant weaknesses and flaws. But Matt Ryan has always been a precision quarterback. He's a pocket player. Some would say he's a dinosaur, but he knows how to play and he knows how to exploit the matchups that are defined and created for him. And they have two players, big, physical, fast athletes that can create and win one-on-one matchups.
Yeah. All right, so I said this, that the Dallas-Denver game, I didn't make too much of it. It's a bury-the-tape Sunday for Dallas.
Sure.
But my eyes do tell me, and they've told me this several times this year, Denver's got players, and there's talent on that Denver team in a lot of different units. So what did that defense do that just completely discombobulated the Cowboys' offense?
It was a couple of things. First of all, Dak did not throw the ball well. But a Vic Fangio defense always does a couple of things, and he uses his safeties extremely well. They do an excellent job in coverage, reading routes, matching routes, passing them off in what are essentially zone match concepts. And it's very difficult at times for the quarterback to recognize who's passing off, who's staying, who's getting passed off to. The interception in the fourth quarter by Caden Stearns was such a good example of that. They totally fooled Dak Prescott. He had no idea that Caden Stearns would be where he was in the context of that defensive structure. And that's always what Vic Fangio has done. It's one reason he's held in such high regard and why so many coaches study him in great detail, Colin, as I'm sure you know, because what he does with his safeties is really, it's a little bit different, and it's tough to coach.
So I'm really interested in this next answer. I watched Justin Fields, and I thought I would trade a win for finding a franchise quarterback, and what I saw is what I kind of projected out of college. It's going to take him a while, but man, there's a lot of juice watching him. He plays with a lot of confidence. In fact, one of my biggest knocks was slide, kid. Please get down. But
yeah.
I watched his feet and I thought this kid is confident and that's a really good Steeler front.
Yeah, he's playing over these last number of weeks with far more poise and composure. And the talent is obvious. We don't need to discuss that. Here's what I would say based on watching every snap of him this year. And people can debate the play calling, the play design. Those are separate issues. I think he still has a ways to go. And by the way, this is not a surprise, Colin. He still has a ways to go as far as reading and recognizing, eliminating and isolating from the pocket. He still shows a tendency to break down prematurely and leave the pocket. And he's still at that stage in his development where he at times takes that extra beat to confirm that his receiver is open before turning it loose. And that's a subtlety that will continue to progress with more experience. But you're right. He's a great, great athlete. He's a big man. You kind of lose sight of how big he is.
Look at that. He's big.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, this might seem a little hyperbolic, but in some ways when he runs, he's almost a combination of like a Michael Vick and a Cam Newton.
Yes. You know,
he's not exactly like either one, but there's similarities.
Yeah. I don't know. I like the way he throws the ball. I like watching him
play. He does. It comes out really well.
Yeah. So I got to tell you this. One of the things I always loved about Lamar Jackson, I defended him a lot, and I said he cares so deeply. Every offseason, he comes back. The first year he came back and his traps were bigger. He was thicker. The next year, I thought he was a little less movement in the pocket. He was a little bit more patient in the pocket, although he's a brilliant runner. And now I watch him and I'm like, you know what? In the pocket, he's made a step. He feels to me when I watch him, he is a better pocket thrower and he wins a lot of games. And by the way, he was behind again this Sunday. I watched every snap of this thing. There was every reason to lose that game. So what are you seeing as Lamar as a pocket passer?
Well, this game was fascinating because in many ways, Lamar as a passer was not the factor in the second half and overtime. They only threw one ball that was really a timing scheme throw that went more than 15 yards in the air in all of their second half and overtime drives. So this was a really clinical approach in the second half with the run game. They've played out of base personnel. They ran the ball. They used their offensive linemen as pullers incredibly effectively. They stretched the Vikings defense out horizontally with the way they ran the ball. And obviously Lamar is a part of your run game and a major part of your run game. But it was an odd game because they won, and he's the quarterback, and they came back. But it was not really a Lamar game in the second half the way we think about Lamar games.
Yeah. Do you like watching tape of him? What do you make of him? I mean, do you when you go into what do you make of watching tape of Lamar in that offense?
I think for me, he's become an acquired taste, just like Phillip Rivers became an acquired taste for me because of the way he threw it. You know, Lamar's become an acquired taste for me because he's not really conventional in the way he plays.
Yeah.
He has a number of tendencies that I think if you're a purist as a quarterback coach, you try to get rid of those tendencies. He has a tendency to climb the pocket when he doesn't need to, when he creates his own pressure. And then, of course, he gets away from his own pressure. So, you know, for me, you know, he's definitely become a better pocket player. Absolutely. But, you know, like so many quarterbacks who just are different, which doesn't make them worse. And, you know, he's a great player. That's not my point. But for me, he's become an acquired taste, but he's a really good player.
Yeah, very productive. So I got to ask you two questions about a game. Again, the world was watching Green Bay, Kansas City. I watched that, but I was glued to the Eagles Chargers, which I thought was a really, I felt like I was learning things about both teams. So let's start with Justin Herbert. He was just on our show this week. What's the film say about Justin Herbert?
That he's got great hair. Justin Herbert is, you know, he has phenomenal ability and obviously a big arm and can move. But that offense, it's really incredibly rhythmic. They almost play offense like you think of the way Drew Brees played in New Orleans. Hit the back foot, ball comes out. Hit the back foot, ball comes out. Which, by the way, is not surprising at all because Joe Lombardi is their offensive coordinator and he came from the Saints. So, in many ways, I see Herbert as kind of mechanical and robotic in a good way. Everything is done with precision and efficiency, and he always has second reaction ability, and he always has the ability on shot plays to drive the ball vertically down the field with ease. I mean, he's an easy thrower. I've watched tape of him, and I go back and forth watching plays and go, wow, he just threw it 65 yards in the air, and it looked like there was no effort whatsoever.
Yeah. It's interesting you said that. The knock out of college was he's a little robotic, and what you're saying is it plays to his strengths. He plays to it.
In a good way. And, you know, I tell you, another guy who was like that, and obviously then we'll move along, was Carson Palmer. You know, very robotic, but in a good way, because there was such a precision and an efficiency to the way they play.
So, but I want to talk about Philadelphia. So Jalen Hurts is never going to throw the ball over the top. That would worry. Most great quarterbacks have that part. It's a component to their game. He is productive. Let's just explain their offense, because I think Philadelphia, there's some real players here. That receiver from Alabama, Devontae Smith, can really play. They've hit on some draft picks. Let's talk about Hurts and the Eagles' offense.
I thought this was their best performance of the season, their most rhythmic. It had a sense of refinement to it. They put Hurts under center, which I believe they need to do. I've said from day one that I think they should treat Hurts like the Cowboys treated Dak Prescott when he came out of Mississippi State as a fourth-round pick. Put him under center, use the run game, use the play-action pass game, the play-action boot game. It has such a big impact on defensive linemen and second-level defenders. I thought they did that this week. You saw him make some very rhythmic timing throws to Devonta Smith at the intermediate levels. I think that this is the way they should continue playing. To me, it will bring out the best in both Hurts and their overall offense.
All right, so we watched the Rams twice this year at home just get boat race, but it was interesting because when I go to like a PFF and people grade offensive lines, I can't grade an offensive line. I can watch wide receivers, quarterback. I don't know. I know Quentin Nelson's good, right? I know Rashawn Slater, left tackle for the Chargers. Nobody gets past him. I can see the obvious stuff of Trent Williams. But it's interesting because I'm always told, oh, the Rams O-line is elite. And then I watch Tennessee and I'm like, guard, center, guard, they're just abusing that front. That's what looked like happened to me is Tennessee looked at the film going in and thought, our guys are better than their guys. We're going to blow this thing up. And McVay for a half didn't really adjust. That's what it felt like to me. What did the film say?
Well, Tennessee over the last month in big victories against the Bills, the Chiefs, the Colts, and now the Rams, their defensive line has been the best in the NFL.
Wow.
And they just use a four-man rush, Colin. And what they do is they have multiple stunt concepts, and there's Jeffrey Simmons who can literally lift up offensive linemen and drive them back into the pocket. But they have multiple stunt concepts. Their defensive profile over the last month has essentially been four-man rush, good mix of zone and man in the secondary, depending on whether it's nickel or dime. But their D-line pass rush over the last month has been the best in the National Football League.
Yeah, well, the Rams will attest to that. Okay, so to me, I think it could be the most interesting game. It is Cleveland, a team that I think has a very good roster, against Mac Jones, who's gotten out of the lousy throw business. And the Patriots are starting to kind of look like the Patriots. Not a ton over the top, but not many penalties. Don't put the ball in the turf. Time of possession, you know, pick up third downs. So you tell me, how's that Browns defense match up with
really good
Mac Jones?
The Browns defense is way overlooked because of all the talk, obviously, about Mayfield, Chubb, Odell Beckham, the whole deal. But the Browns defense is really good. They have tremendous depth along their D-line. They've got some really good players. We know about Garrett. Clowney's been solid. He's not a great pass rusher, but he's really solid, and you can move him around. Malik McDowell has played really well. I'm sure you remember him coming out of Michigan State.
Yep.
A big-time talent, but had all kinds of issues, and hopefully he's settled those because he's playing at a really high level. So this is a very good defense, and I'm fascinated to see this game. We know what the Browns on offense want to be, who they are. They want to run the ball and have the play-action pass game work off their running game, and that's how Baker Mayfield will make his plays down the field.
And your play of the week involves Baker.
It's exactly what I just spoke about, and let's go to it right now. It was a long touchdown pass to Donovan Peoples-Jones against the Bengals last week. And this is exactly what they are. They actually ran the same play last year against the Tennessee Titans, also to Peoples-Jones, for a touchdown. And this is what I'm talking about. They have three tight ends on the field, 13 personnel. And they have Donovan Peoples-Jones as the single receiver to the boundary side of the field. Now, what they're going to get from the Bengals is cover four. And this is, it's kind of a coverage that's both a run and a pass coverage. So now if we focus on the boundary corner and the boundary safety and Peoples-Jones, we'll get a feel for what goes on here. Now, it's really important to see Peoples-Jones. He angles his stem inside toward the safety. He wants to grab the safety's eyes. Now, the safety does not have any other vertical threat coming at him, so he should be focused on Peoples-Jones right now. No one else. He should focus on Peoples-Jones, help his corner. But what happens here is the crossing route by David Njoku grabs the safety's eyes, and it should not, but it does. And what that means now is the corner, who's an outside leverage player because of Peoples-Jones' stem inside, he's not in good position to play this deep post route at all. So you see Peoples-Jones run by him. But the important thing here, this came out of 13 personnel, three tight ends. It's run personnel. They're in a run formation. Everything they do, Colin, is built off the run game. That's when Baker Mayfield is at his best. It's not an individual offense in terms of, oh, they need Odell Beckham. It's a schemed offense, and it doesn't really matter who he's throwing to.
Yeah. Great stuff, Greg, as always. Thank you. Even notice Justin Herbert's hair. That's the kind of work we get from Greg Cosell. Good seeing you again.
Thanks, Colin. Appreciate it.
You bet.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
The kid at Pittsburgh I like, kid at Liberty people like. It's not a great class. So we also know that Aaron Rodgers could move. Deshaun Watson is going to move. And I strongly believe Russell Wilson will look and go to the front office and look to move, especially if this season keeps going down the drain. He wants an offensive coach. And so I've said before with Aaron, I think Green Bay either smartly resigns him or he would go to Pittsburgh. Why? Because quarterbacks that leave good situations, like Brady in New England, tend to go to places that have the one thing they don't feel they consistently get. Aaron doesn't feel like, I never get a great defense. That's why Tom left for Tampa. I never have great weapons. Never had an offensive head coach. So Tom It's not like he didn't take 80% of Tampa with him or 80% of New England with him, but the one thing he didn't have was sort of a laid-back offensive coach and great weapons. That's what he chose. What has Aaron not really had? A great defense, playmaking defense consistently. He'll take a lot of what he learned in Green Bay, very successful with him. But like Tom, what don't I have? Russell Wilson's interesting here. So Russell Wilson is watching Aaron with an offensive coach. And Drew Brees had an offensive coach. And Tom Brady now has an offensive coach. And I look at Russell Wilson. Seattle does not want him in the NFC. They want him in the AFC, just like Aaron, if he went, would go to Pittsburgh. You don't want to face Aaron in your conference and get in the way of you going to Super Bowls. If you meet him in the Super Bowl, that's another thing. You can live with that. I think the Denver Broncos, I'll say this, Drew Lock's done, Teddy's not the answer. I believe the Denver Broncos, put this down, are the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before Brady got there. Yeah, they got good players. And now Brady gets there, and you're like, hell, they're loaded. If you look at Denver right now, tight end, Fant, stud, wide receivers, it's Jerry Jeudy, it's Cortland Sutton, it's the kid they drafted out of Penn State. They got real. They have two good backs. They have a star tight end. They have 3 to 4 wide receivers. But again, they play in a division with high-profile Kansas City, high-profile Raiders and their chaos, Justin Herbert. Denver is Tampa. They've won Super Bowls. They've had moments they're great. I think Denver's talent is way better than people think. Just like when Brady got to Tampa, we're all like, they're loaded. Well, they were loaded with Jameis. I think Denver has got two great corners. The reason they got rid of Von Miller, they like their young edge rushers. I think their offensive line is at least average. Their wide receiving group just needs the right quarterback. Two good backs, potential star at tight end. The Russell Wilson, I know this is a off-season topic, but I'm looking at a bad quarterback draft. Deshaun Watson's out there. Aaron could go. Nobody's talking about Russell Wilson. I strongly believe he moves. I'm just throwing it out there. I watched Denver last weekend against Dallas, and I'm like, do we all understand? They did what Tampa would do. Like, a couple times last year, not last year, the year before with Jameis, you would watch Tampa play, and when Jameis was zoned in a little bit, you'd be like, oh, they match up with everybody. And then Brady gets there. They cut down on the turnovers. Brady makes the O-line. It's got more symmetry. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I'm telling you, Russell Wilson, Denver, put it down.